You're listening to Cross the Line 1524, the Common Man's Podcast.
But I came here just one drink.
It's Cross the Line 1524. Join us at the Rusted Nail Speakeasy with a glass of bourbon, table 12, as the guys sit around and discuss distilleries, common day events, or whatever comes to the bar top. That's right. Cross the Line 1524.
Good looking ladies been sitting around me all night.
All right, so welcome to Cross the Line 1524. I'm Alan Stenger with
Dwayne Bischoff.
We are
the 15 side.
Mike Gardner.
Jeff Montag.
Scotty Bourbon.
And we are the 24 side.
And we got a special guest sitting across from us sipping some whiskey.
I'm Brian Batta. Batta Farm Machinery. Sorry,
he was in the middle.
I got him right in the middle of that. That's how you know it's real.
So once again, Brian.
Yep, I'm Brian Batta with Batta Farm Machinery. I own a small farm equipment dealership, mostly used, but some new lines as well.
Where are you located at?
Right off of 46 between Penntown and St. Leon.
So I reached out to Brian and invited him down here. I've known Brian for several years, really for beekeeping again, is really how we met.
Another beekeeper, and you got to watch out.
He lives over there on the 15 side.
That's
and
right.
You guys need all the help you can get.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh.
So I figured we'd...
did you go to East Central?
I did not.
No. Oh, darn.
So where did you graduate from high school?
I graduated from Milan.
Milan, okay.
Milan Indians. Nothing wrong with that?
Nope. So we had been talking a little bit. We've talked a little bit in the past about agriculture. Well, first of all, I want to
talk about this whiskey.
About
we jump right around.
About this bourbon that Brian brought us.
So a couple of friends of mine out in California, Sierra Nevada area, they started this whiskey company, Team Whiskey, and I really like it. Thought you guys would like it, so I figured I'd bring a couple bottles and share.
We do. It's actually very good.
Yep.
It's an MGP product to start with, and they do some good stuff with it. And apparently they ship water to them, if we're understanding what the... You know,
that's cool.
Since your buddies, we might try to set up a podcast with...
Yeah, talk
yeah,
on the
air. I'm sure they'd do that.
We'd love to do that.
Is this their mash bill? Or
it's an MGP mash bill.
Or something that they picked out, or is it something
they've
created?
Yeah, they did pick it out themselves. They they did a whiskey tour. Kevin told me a story a little bit about it. They tried a bunch of stuff and then decided on what they liked and bought a bunch of barrels of it and sat on it for 5 years before opening them.
Yeah, that's what's awesome. It's a five-year. A lot of MGP stuff that gets out early is four-year stuff. So this is a five-year. It's very smooth. Very caramel on the front end, on the nosing, and just a very smooth. You can taste the rye in it, of course, because it's MGP,
but it's not
not overpowering by any means. A good bourbon.
Yes, yeah. I'm curious that we are all part of OMB, and we decided at another podcast that whatever we decide is correct. So my assumption was it's bottled in Nevada, so while they're hauling out the whiskey out there, they're filling it back up with water and bringing a tanker of water back. So
yeah, so it's made with Sierra Nevada mountain water. So they've got to be bringing water back. Yeah.
That's
cool.
Because
normally what makes MGP products so good is the water they do use from the local area here.
Yeah.
So it'd be neat to find out the story about the water on this. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, we'll have to.
So it's artfully crafted for sportsmen by sportsmen.
There you go.
So, and if you go to their website, the Sportsman's Whiskey or Team Whiskey, they've got a great website, a great visual of the a couple of bottles of bourbon in front of a fire. So it looks good. They did an excellent job, and thank you for sharing this with us.
Absolutely. Yes. It's good. Do you know where they're distributing?
They're distributing from California.
Right.
They did just this past week announce that they opened up nationwide shipping.
Okay.
So they have that figured out through, I think the company's called Select Distillers. Should be on the Team Whiskey website or anywhere you go to look for it. So
that's awesome.
Yep. Like the logo, very outdoorsy. You know, it's sportsman type.
Need to open that bottle of batch two here before we're done too. It has a different flavor.
We will. We'll open that while we're talking. So we got you here. We want to talk a little bit about your business, your background, how you ended up doing what you're doing, and kind of the state of agriculture in our small towns compared to what it used to be. It's a lot different than when Dwayne and I were growing up. Yeah. Things have definitely changed. I love your place because you got old machinery there. I got a bunch of Alice Chalmers tractors.
We won't hold that against you, Alan.
Trying to hold that against me. So talk about your business, what you do, and your view of what's going on agriculturally in our neck of the woods.
We focus mainly on hay equipment, so naturally we're finding most of the small guys that aren't doing hundreds and thousands of acres of row crops. You know, they're anywhere from, I have customers that bale 4 acres of hay to several hundred acres of hay. So I try to keep an inventory that can fit any budget, you know. I can get somebody square baling for as little as $5,000 if they don't need top of the line equipment. We also tune up the square balers and we hook everything up and run them and make sure that it's operating as properly as we can make it operate in the shop. I don't have enough hay to run through everything, but we do the best we can, right. And we're pretty good. You know, we sell roughly 100 balers a year between round and square, both, and everything in between.
So typically you're buying used balers and reconditioning, or are you selling new balers?
We're selling used and reconditioning.
Okay, that's what, yeah. And you do, and then you do a lot of repair on all kinds of other farm equipment.
I do not do outside repair. I just don't have the manpower for it, but we keep busy enough just working on the stuff that I pick up.
You're picking up, reconditioning, and reselling.
Yep.
Okay. So then how did that business start?
It was kind of my dad's retirement business, and it blew up on him. He started it about 15 years ago, and 3 or 4 years in, realized it was going to get bigger than he could handle. He hired a couple of mechanics working for him, and then I moved back home and started working for him full time about 12 years ago now. And 2 years ago, he decided he wanted to retire, and I bought the business from him again. Yeah, a second time.
So this time for good?
Yeah. Well, we'll see.
So what did he retire from initially?
He was a New Holland dealer.
He was a dealer. Okay.
He part owned Zimmer Tractor in Aurora.
Okay.
I think he owned a third share or something like that, and sold his shares, and started this used dealership. Before that, it was Bata Implement Company, and they started out in 1977 as Oliver White dealers, and we've been doing it ever since.
I'm a hobby farm too, so I'm one of those 4 acre guys baling. And for somebody like me, you can't afford to go buy new equipment to bale 4 acres of hay.
No, and you don't need to.
Right. There's no sense in it. And it's good. It's sad that there isn't more of you guys out there, but you guys are disappearing. So, I mean, I know. I used to run a towing company. I towed a guy one time that had an accident that was coming from I don't know how many states away, coming to buy a piece of equipment. So you got people that travel, you know, long distances.
Oh yeah, we're really worldwide. I'd say the tri-state area is the bulk of our business, but I have some stuff that is going to a cocoa farmer in Africa.
Oh wow!
And we send to Mexico pretty regular.
Awesome!
Wow!
But you know, the tri-state area is definitely our bread and butter for sure.
Yeah, so I want to go back, you know, when we met. So your daughter's 8? Is that what you told me the other day?
My oldest is 12.
Your oldest is 12.
Yeah, I do have an 8-year-old. That's good.
No, so your oldest is 12. So that's how long I've known you, because I remember when she was born. So that's you again. We were, you know, part of that the Southeast Indiana Bee Club over there, and you showed up, and we started chatting and realized we're just a couple, you know, stones throw away from each other.
Yeah.
And that's how we met.
Yeah.
And so that's how we kind of and I remember it was about that because your daughter was just I don't know. I think you were just expecting or something.
That's very possible. Right. I don't remember.
So, honestly, give me more of your background. You said when you moved back home. So you were out of state for a period of time?
Yeah, about 10 years. Okay. I went to diesel mechanic school and finished that, and then I moved to Central Illinois.
Okay.
And was working on heavy trucks and things of that nature for a good long time, and then working for farmers as well. Big farmers out there. one of the smaller farms out there that I worked for was 2,500 acres.
Yeah.
I also worked for a hog farm that was roughly 5,000 head hogs.
Yeah.
So a whole different world than what we see around here. And sure. We do have some of that in this area, but it's, you know, my neighbor there farmed 65,000 acres. It was,
wow.
It's just different. We don't see that in our little corner here.
So what brought you back home?
Dad's business.
Okay.
Yeah.
So he needed the help, and it just made
sense. Yeah,
it
just worked out with our life at the time to make it happen. So we did it.
Back home, close to family and all that support.
Yep.
So, and then you come, you know, outside of you directly, you have a lot of relatives that farmed right there where you're at, right?
Yeah, our business is based on the family farm that Grandpa bought back in the 40s.
Okay.
And we have 4 acres, I think, under gravel for farm equipment there, and the rest is for the cows and a little bit of row crops, not much.
Okay, so, you know, I can't speak for everybody here. You know, I grew up, you know, again, stone's throw from you. Dwayne, you know, mile up the road from you. Alan out here. I can't speak so much for Scotty and Mike with regard to their experience around farming. You know, I can tell you, my dad was a small kind of, I'll say, hobby farmer, because he worked in a factory all his life, and we had livestock and stuff like that. But the farms up and down the road, I worked for guys, you know, all my young life, baling hay or tending pigs or whatever the case may be. I think, you know, Dwayne has a history back in the farming and agriculture, certainly with the greenhouse business. And Alan, both his grandparents on both sides farmed for a living. Yeah. So
Where I grew up, I could walk from here to where my house was out. So I grew up on farms as well.
Yep, and then you
I worked on farms.
Well, sure.
Yeah. Yep.
So we all have.
Yeah, but those farmers had horses, and
we actually had horses. So yeah. I know all about hay.
So we all have at least our upbringing around farming and agriculture. Most of us probably were involved in 4-H one time or another, and how that tends to be a big thing in Dearborn County and Franklin County here in Indiana, and. So we talk occasionally. We haven't talked really so much on the podcast of through our lifetime how agriculture and farming has changed in our area. Okay, so I often tell people there's still a lot of farming going on. So like Franklin County is I think it's roughly 400 square miles, and only about a population of about 24,000 people. So that's pretty thin. So there's a lot of area here for farming. And it's been mostly small farming comparative, you know, when you're talking about out in Illinois and further out west. But I get in conversation sometimes, and where I live, if I drive 3 miles straight up the road and I figure a mile either way, so we'll say that's 6 square miles, I would calculate from the time I was a kid there's probably 30 miles of fence line that doesn't exist, that existed when I was a kid. And farming has changed that much because they don't run woven wire fence, they don't need woven wire fence, and a lot of the farmers have gone to crop farming as opposed to livestock.
Yeah.
I mean, is that kind of your experience? And
yeah, a lot of that is going on. crop farming, if you have the money to buy the equipment, I feel is easier. It does limit you to being, so when you sell that crop, you're selling it on a national market. You know, there's they're going to tell you what they're paying for it, not the other way around. With hay, you can kind of do it the other way around a little bit to some degree. I mean, there is ebbs and flows in the market, but it's not. If you want $10 a bale and everybody else is getting $5, you don't have to sell your hay if you don't want to.
Right.
With corn and beans, I don't know what else you do but haul it to the river and sell it off.
Right.
You know. The in our area, like I said before, it's not massive, huge agriculture.
Right.
It's too broken up by hills around here. You go Rush County, you know, a little bit west and a little bit north, and you start getting into some larger acre mega farms. I'm not going to say there's anything wrong with that. There's not. Right. We need them.
Absolutely.
We also need small livestock guys. We need guys selling freezer beef. I know, Dwayne, I know you sell some freezer beef. We need guys doing that. That's what's going to put food in your freezer, and you know, it's going to keep you fed for the winter.
Right. So the changes I see, too, also include, again, you talk about hay baling. So, of course, when I was a kid, you know, I was always baling hay. And, I don't know the farmers could find a kid that willing to bale hay right now, square bales.
Right.
So most of them have gone to round bales, something, you know, they can bale themselves and haul with a tractor all the way to the storage shed.
Well, if you're looking to learn more about the bourbon country in probably the most unorthodox way you've ever heard it, you need to listen to Two Shots on a Barrel podcast. You can join the Bow Brothers, a couple of longtime goofy radio DJs from Kentucky, and learn more about what makes the heart of bourbon country so famous. You can listen to the Bow Brothers as they look to interview experts in the bourbon industry and other things that are truly unique to Central Kentucky, like wineries, craft breweries, caves, kayaking, you name it. It's Two Shots on a Barrel podcast with the Bow Brothers. You can find it on all of the major podcast platforms. Two Shots on a Barrel. You can learn more about Kentucky only the way the Bow Brothers can bring it on Two Shots on a Barrel podcast.
Beachville Liquor Co. in Beachville, Indiana, and Tebby Liquor in Brookville, Indiana. One of our favorite sponsors right here across the line, 1524. And it doesn't matter whether you're looking for a great bourbon, a blended whiskey, maybe a rye or a scotch, or maybe you're into wine, or maybe vodkas or tequilas. It just doesn't matter. You know why? Because they're all available at Batesville Liquor Co. in Batesville, Indiana, and Brookville, Indiana has Tebby Liquor. Now, if you're looking for something special, something unique, try their barrel picks. They have barrel picks that they've hand-selected from different distilleries on sale at both Batesville Liquor Co. and Tebby Liquors. That's right. They're unicorns. You will never get that same taste of a barrel anyplace. Those are hand-selected barrels just for you. Once again, if you want a beer, if you want a wine cooler, yeah, they still make wine coolers. They've got it all at Batesville Liquor Co., located at 315 Shopping Village in Batesville, Indiana, or Tebby Liquors. Tebby Liquors, right here in Brookville, Indiana. And tell them to cross the line, 1524 Crew sends you.
Gilman's Home Centers, with 14 locations and growing. You know what? It's the party time of the year. That's right. You might need some party rentals, and they've got them. They've got bouncy houses, tents, even slushy machines for those adult party-friendly drinks. You know what? Things are heating up, which means you need to start thinking about watering options for your lawn and garden. They've got it. And you know what? It may be too hot for you. They've got plenty of air conditioning units and fans just for you. Gilman Home Centers, with 14 locations in Indiana and Ohio.
Right.
Yeah, and there's been some development in small square bales with accumulators and grapples and things of that nature to make it less manpower to handle small square bales as well. But ultimately, that creates more headache. You know, there's more machines to maintain. And so you're either trying to find somebody to pay that's willing to show up to stack the bales, or you're going to maintain a machine. It's a catch-22.
Right.
You know, and a lot of guys are going to bigger round bales, and there's even some big square bales starting to show up, because big square bales, you can put a lot of hay on the ground in a short amount of time. downside there is you need a really high horsepower tractor. So a lot of guys in this area don't have that. So our little area, I don't feel ready for that, but round bales are definitely what,
right?
I'd say 80% of my baler sales is round bales, right? You know.
Well, our rain here, I mean, a lot of guys, my stack mine inside. I store mine under a roof to keep them dry, but a lot of guys store them outside. So the round bale lets it shed some water. Somewhat, you still have your percent of loss, but being round allows it to shed, whereas those big squares like you see out west, that would just be big sponges around here.
You have to get them inside. Yeah.
So that's the other benefit, I think, around here is just the moisture, the rain we have is going to slow down people going to that. Plus, like you said, the size of the tractors you have. Our fields aren't big enough to put the tractor on.
Yeah, exactly.
Over in Decatur County, there's a lot of the big square bales.
Yeah.
And they'll store them outside but cover them with tarps.
Right.
Cover them somehow. Huge stacks.
You know what?
Bales.
These guys just... In my day, we, no lie, we do 10,000 square bales of hay and about 5,000 of straw a year. And these guys don't know what they're missing.
I used to work.
Right.
Well, I work
good
for
exercise, right? Yeah.
I worked for a local guy, Mark Hall, when I was high school.
Yeah. Oh yeah, he was big.
I used to bail, and we'd bail 2,000-3,000 a day.
You know,
that was a good day.
Dad always tells the story that it was never a better day than when they were done with their last field of hay.
That's it.
And then a neighbor would call.
Yeah. One of my stories is I got done bailing for Mark one of those 2,000 bale days or whatever, and next morning I'm sleeping in because I'm exhausted. My mom yells, "Get up! Your cousin's here, needs help baling hay." And I yelled, "I'm not doing it." And she said, "He's paying 20 an hour. I'll be right there." Because that was a few years
ago.
It was a lot. And I was the only one helping him, and it worked out. All I did was drive the truck. So I was like, man, this is a good day.
Oh, wow. How'd you luck out?
He had nobody else to help him, so he'd throw him on the truck, stack him, and I just kept moving the truck. I'd jump out here once in a while and get him close, you know, but it was a good day.
That's the difference between our generation and today's generation, who'd rather sit and play on their video games than go out and work. I mean, we wanted money.
Yeah,
we wanted money. Needed it.
I mean, our parents didn't give us money to go out and do stuff.
Yeah.
We had to have our own money.
So I'll tell you when I jumped, when you know, you've been baling clover hay for the last 2 weeks for different farmers, and then one of them calls and he's baling straw.
Let me in right now.
That's easy work.
You felt like a strong man, too, man. You're throwing him over the wagon.
Exactly. Or you went from doing alfalfa clover mix to fescue for somebody that's doing horses.
Yeah.
And it was just like, give me that fescue. Yeah. Ain't nothing there, you know?
Yeah.
I got out of the baling. I had calls from neighbors. But I worked for a seed corn farmer, and it was pretty much year round from spring till harvest time. So I got out of the baling, so I got lucky in that regard.
Yeah,
you got tough forearms baling, man.
Oh yeah.
So, and I think too, and I could be wrong on this. You might be able to tell me, Brian. Like wheat farming, it wasn't really a thing back when I was a kid so much. Wheat was kind of a rotation crop, I think, or a cover crop and a rotation crop. Now it's a full out. I mean, it's a full out thing to.
It's to worth grow a little more wheat these days, yeah, I think. Right. The grain itself, and then you get the added benefit of the straw, which is also worth something. Right. So you do see a little bit more guys. I know we've started growing a little bit just for our own use to bed the cattle.
Yeah.
And then we get the grain on top of that.
Yeah.
But it's – so you can double crop behind beans, and then you get a little more out of your ground every year as well. So right. I think you get a lot of guys doing that, trying to capitalize a little better per acre.
Sure.
But I think that's what's going on.
So now. I know when I first met you and you were working also for – your uncle or your cousin's dairy farm often. I mean, at least filling in over there or working for them, and that was part of your living. And they had a pretty good sized dairy farm operation, at least for around here. But they're
small in the grand scheme of things,
right.
But we milked about 100 cows at the time, yeah.
Right. So, and you were telling me the other day that they're no longer doing dairy.
About 2 years ago, they decided to quit, and we just went to beef, so we started breeding. Well, we sold off all the better carrot producer cows to other dairies and things of that nature, but some heifers and things like that left other dairies that when we did have good we had pretty good genetics, and we got a lot of milk out of most of our cows. So they were, some of them were pretty sought after, but the older ones and the rougher cows are the ones that had something wrong with them, that, you know, like a three-quarter cow where one quarter doesn't milk or something like that is not as desirable as far as a dairy cow, but you can still get a calf out of that cow.
Sure.
And so that's what we have left, about 40, maybe 50 brood cows, and we're breeding to a beef bull now. And
okay.
So we still have somewhere between 50 and 100 cows running around out there.
So I was telling a couple young fellas a couple weeks ago, one was in high school, one was just out of high school, and I was talking about a little bit about the agriculture and what we're talking about here tonight, and in specific dairy farms. Again, I talk about that 3 mile stretch up the road from me and 2 miles either way. And when I was a kid in that stretch, there was probably 5 dairy farms. They weren't huge, yep, but there were 5 operating dairy farms. And none of those exist now. And as a matter of fact, I think we talked about it. We're figuring in Franklin County, there's maybe 1 dairy farm left in the whole county.
Wow.
I know of one for sure. I don't know of any others. Okay.
So,
in Franklin.
So Boomers no longer
right next
does
door,
dairy.
Right next door to here.
And then my cousin's Jim Stanger, he was talking about getting out of dairy. I haven't talked to him, but he was one of the few remaining last year, and he was talking about getting out
was
of
he?
Boomers problem, you know, he said, I can't get help.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, it's 7 days a week.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Twice a day.
Twice yeah. a day, 7 days a week.
No yes. vacations.
Yep.
Right. So my cousins own a dairy, Canoes. I don't know if you know Bill and Lillian Canoe. They
yeah.
were mm-hmm. out in 48. I mean, they had a dairy, and when they'd come over to visit, you know, they'd be over, and when we were kids, we'd be playing with kids, and it's like they never stayed for dinner because, oh, 4 o'clock, you know, got to go yep. home and milk. And they just, they pack up and off they go home because they got to milk. And in the morning, you know, first thing in the morning, you got to milk the cows. The cows, they aren't waiting. So, you know, it's a hard job. It's a hard
yeah,
life.
Definitely is. Yeah.
And it's a committed life. You know, you're not, it's not a Monday through Friday job.
Yeah, so I'm pretty sure Jim Stanger got out of the dairy business last year because I've seen him camping this year. So, yeah. Those two things don't go together.
Absolutely.
So,
and I'm pretty sure we were the last dairy farm in Dearborn County to
is that right?
Out. Yeah, we're right on the northern edge of Dearborn County,
right?
Basically, and we were the, as far as I know, we were the last ones.
So I know, you know, where I live, right across the road, was a couple hundred acre dairy farm all my growing up, and that family, good Catholic family as they were, I think they had 11 or 12 kids. And
need people, you know, to milk cows.
We need people to tend those cows, right? But there ain't one of them that farms now. No, I mean, they were all like, nope, we ain't doing that. So.
Well, like Boomer's son, he'd rather cash crop because he saw the return on the cash crop, and not all the same hours, obviously.
Right.
That's the killer with the dairy. I mean, it's just you're there 7 days a week.
Yeah,
and like I said, Alan said, where are you going to find somebody that wants to work 7 days a week?
Yeah.
Yeah,
so
it's pretty tough.
It's funny. So one of Josh's good friends, he went through school and he actually does hay. I think he got stuff from you, Andrew Knieven.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he was just in the other day.
Yeah, so he is taking on the whole hay operation thing, which is pretty cool. He's a hard worker. There's a group of kids that did graduate with Josh that still have the hardworking backbone. So that was great to see because I saw he tagged you guys on some equipment. So
yeah.
Well, and like you said, the hay business, if you kind of specialize and get good hay, you can still get good money for your hay because, number one, there's a lot less people producing it. So having hay, depending on the seasons too, how our rain goes, if you get your hay in and you get it in dry and you've got good hay, you can make a decent money selling good square bales.
Yeah, and a lot of that is weather dependent,
right?
But if you don't have the crop to begin with, I mean, good alfalfa is just hard to find,
right?
It's hard
here
to grow,
right?
That's why out west you see alfalfa's all under pivots. They're pumping water on it every day to make sure it's good. Around here, we have a good enough climate to where we do have pretty decent hay in this area. You don't see very many people with very many acres of alfalfa because it's so finicky and so expensive. You know, you might have a guy that bales 80 acres of hay and 10 of it's alfalfa orchard grass or something like that.
Yeah. It's just I had two fields of alfalfa, and I'm glad the alfalfa's pretty much gone out of it in the orchard grass, because it is. It's you talk about Finn. If it's a little too wet, it's too wet. If it's a little too dry, the leaves fall off of it, and you got sticks. It isn't worth anything. So when you catch it, it's beautiful hay. But man, when you don't, just soon burn it.
Yeah, I mean it's worse than fescue if you don't get it right.
Yeah.
So if I had a square baler here, I could have baled today.
Yeah, the grass. The yard grass, yeah.
That grass in the mud.
It's heavy.
I must hook the mower to the pontoon. But it was crazy.
So, Brian, in your business, kind of, you know, a thumb on the agriculture around this area, this neck of the woods in particular. So, is this what you're seeing, kind of the way the agriculture is going in our couple counties here, is this kind of what you're seeing for the next 20, 25 years, or you got worries about how things are going to pan out?
I'm hoping we have 20 or 25 more years left. My business is built around that idea, right. I guess. One thing that's helping is this homesteader movement that we're seeing. I know it's a lot on social media or whatever. It's the way a lot of us grew up, probably, you know. Big garden and trying to cut out the grocery store as much as possible because you just simply couldn't afford everything we needed at the grocery store, so we had to grow it ourselves.
Doing your own canning, doing your own, you know.
And those guys might have one milk cow that they're feeding or a beef cow or two just to kind of put one in the freezer and maybe the other one pays for it or something like that. And they're baling 4, 5, 10 acres of hay. It doesn't need to be any more than that. That's perfect as far as I'm concerned. You can get by with cheaper equipment, older equipment, but good working equipment.
Right.
And I think that is holding us up into the potential to getting to the 25-year mark or maybe even further with the situation the way it is. I know everywhere you look, you're seeing farms go up for sale and they're getting busted up. But if a 100-acre farm gets busted up 10 times and each one of those guys tries to have one or two cows and a big garden and bale a little bit of hay, you know, try to cut out the grocery store as much as possible. There's still hope in that.
Right.
As much as I hate to
say it. Yeah, and you mentioned that. So, I know some people and they are on social media and, they're doing a bit of the homestead stuff. They got one milk cow. And so now, you know, they're making their own cheese and stuff like that. And they got eggs selling eggs and, just all that stuff, and it's neat to see. I mean, it's again, like you said, you know, it's a lot of what I remember when I was a kid. That most of any of these small farms around, and my parents did. I mean, we had a grape arbor, and I didn't know grape jelly out of a store. You know, most of my childhood. I mean, my mom made enough grape jelly in a season that you know carried us you know through the year pretty much. And there's a little bit of desire of people getting back to that.
Yeah, I see that a lot. I'd say, I don't know, 10, 15, maybe even 20% of my customers are new. They've never baled hay before in their life. And that's good. That means they're buying some ground somewhere.
Suckers. You know.
And they got to have equipment.
They have some equipment.
Who are they coming to?
Hopefully they're all finding me, but I know they're not, but that's okay too, you know. I don't really know what else to say about that, I guess, but.
You know what you need? You need some more whiskey.
That's
some
right.
That's some good stuff right there.
Yes, it is.
It is. Yeah, while we were talking, Alan broke open the second batch. Jeff hasn't tasted it yet.
Yeah, I haven't.
So it's out of these are both small batch bottlings.
Different
this
batches.
This is a different batch.
Different barrel.
There's a noticeable color difference. Oh, you want that?
Yeah.
I know.
It's like
there's a noticeable color difference between the two. Yeah, it's a lot darker. I think this one is smoother than the first one.
I thought so too.
Yeah.
I mean, I really like that one.
I like them both.
Yeah, neither one's bad, but that one is better. So,
I think batch I like one is both. Sold out, I'm pretty sure. If you order it now, it's going to be batch two, I'm pretty sure.
Well, that's not a bad thing.
Nothing wrong with that.
Now, do your buddies have any plans of starting a distillery? Are they going to distill anything themselves, or they're just going to buy barrels and their favorite barrels. And
I can't answer that. I wouldn't put it past them, but
so maybe someday.
I haven't heard any talk of that.
Yeah, okay.
We'll find out when we do the podcast with them.
Yeah,
we'll
okay. Yeah, 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 that's a question for them.
Pretty cool stuff.
You want some of that too?
Yeah, please.
So, Brian, I'm going to jump back to one thing I mentioned earlier about the fence lines and the other thing and how that not only is a change in agriculture, it's a change in our ecology and wildlife habitat. So we've talked for years around here, around this area, about the lack of woodland game, cottontail rabbits, quail, and that kind of stuff. And I think what a lot of people don't realize is that 30 miles of fence line I talked about on, you know, 10 or 15 feet on either side of that fence line was
great
just
cover.
The best. Was just
that was
the
their
best.
Habitat.
That was their habitat.
Yeah.
Not only that, you know, we're beekeepers, and there was also a lot of bee forage in those fence lines.
Yep,
wildflowers.
Hollow tree or place for them to live.
Hollow trees, fence lines, blackberries, raspberries blooming. And all kind of other flowers in there. So, I mean, that's the other thing I don't think people realize. And every once in a while, you know, you've got some of these farmers that you'll see them, they'll leave some crop on the edge of a field for a little extra cover for game or what have you. But it's awful hard. I mean, you give up that acre.
It's either that or the limb above gets too far out and it's going to rub the combine.
Yeah, well, that could be too. Break a window.
That could be too. No, there's some that intentionally do that for that reason.
Is, they're deer hunters.
But and that may be too. But it's tough. It's tough when you talk about, you know, if you've got a half mile, a field that's a half mile long, when you give up, 15 feet of that for a half mile, that's a fair bit of crop you lose, right?
Yeah, it's several rows, and that is money in the farmer's pocket.
That's exactly right.
I know a lot of guys tearing fence rows out, and I know a lot of guys leaving them, so I don't know what the mix is there. I'd say there's less guys tearing them out just because of the cost of doing it.
The labor,
Yeah, but I know when corn hit a high of $7-$8, whatever it got to a few years back, you did see a lot of ground getting cleared to put in new fields.
Yeah.
And you saw a lot of hay ground come out of hay into row crops during that time, too.
Yeah, and that's not a bash on them. Those guys are fighting for their living. And,
you need that rotation every once in a while. It does not hurt to
absolutely
switch a hay field into corn every once in a while.
Right.
And, you know, it just puts something different on the soil, and then you can go back to hay if you want to, which I think has happened a lot.
Yep. All right.
Cool. Cool. Anything else our podcast listeners need to know about you?
Oh, I don't know.
Well, you got a website, so
it's simple. So my website is battafarmmachinery.com. My business name is Bata Farm Machinery, and my email is battafarmmachinery@gmail.com.
There you go.
And that's Batta. Bata.
That's right.
We need a commercial now for.
I'll whip one up. How's that?
Yeah.
So we had a roundtable discussion the podcast prior. Do you believe in Sasquatch?
I believe it's possible.
There we go. We got another one.
Yep.
There we go. I mean, it is what it is.
It's plausible.
It is plausible. There's stuff out there we don't know about. There's stuff in the ocean we don't know about.
That's right.
Good deal. Hey. I don't have anything else. You guys got anything else?
Nope.
I'm good. I'm all good.
I think we're going to Brian, I appreciate you coming out.
Yeah, thanks
for
the whiskey.
Fun, sure. It was a good time.
Yeah, awesome. So, you a avid podcast? Do you listen to our podcast?
I do, on occasion, yeah.
Cool.
When I'm in the truck, especially.
Cool. So, how did you find us?
Through Jeff. I saw him posting stuff, so.
Cool.
Thought I'd give it a listen. I've heard quite a few of them.
Good deal. So, and you're still friends with Jeff.
He was willing to actually come here.
You came here. We must not be as bad as we think we are. So for Cross the Line 1524, I'm Alan Stanger with
Dwayne Bischoff,
Mike Gardner,
Jeff Montag,
Scotty Bourbon,
and our very special guest,
Brian Bata.
And we'll see y'all next time. We're going to go bale some hay.
Experience the magic of music in Metamore, Indiana. Join us every last Friday of the month for an unforgettable evening of acoustic talent at the historic Metamore Opry Barn. Whether you're a seasoned musician or just love great music, our open mic welcomes all talents and all styles. Step up to the mic share your song, share your story, and share your soul. Make memories, make friends, make music at the Final Friday Acoustic Open Mic Night. Don't miss out. Join us at the Metamore Opry Barn, where the last Friday of every month is a celebration of community and creativity. The Final Friday Acoustic Open Mic, where the spirit of music comes alive. You've been listening to Cross the Line 1524 with all the guys, whether we're at the Rust and Nail Speakeasy or out on the road. You know we always have a great time. Hey, check out our webpage at www.crosstheline1524.com. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. Check out Podcast 1524 on Twitter and Cross the Line 15/24 on Facebook. Give me one before you kick me out the door.